every time the Law and Justice Party makes an election campaign, they try to scapegoat a certain minority in the country. The LGBTI community gets scapegoated for basically everything, portrayed as a Western ideology. A lot of Polish activists fear that Poland is going into the same direction as Russia has been going. So yeah, the LGBTI community in Poland at the moment is very, very pessimistic about their future.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. El Salvador makes history convicting cops of trans woman's murder, Cayman's British governor forces domestic partnerships, and Belgian queer researcher resists Poland crackdown. All that and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world the week ending August 8, 2020. The conviction of three police officers in El Salvador made headlines this week because it is such a rare event. Most murders of transgender people around the world remain unsolved because authorities consider investigating them to be a waste of time. But the brutal killers of 29-year-old transgender sex worker Camila Diaz-Cordova have been sentenced to 20 years in prison. When the three officers responded to a public disorder complaint last year, according to reports, they offered to drive Diaz-Cordova home. Instead, they held her face down in the back of the patrol car with her hands handcuffed behind her back and beat her mercilessly. They finished the assault by throwing her out of their moving car. She died a few days later in a local hospital. Human Rights Watch says this is the first conviction for the murder of a transgender person in the country's history. However, even though El Salvador's 2015 hate crimes law requires longer sentences for hate-based violence, prosecutors declined to add that charge. Queer activist Roberto Zapata said that failure leaves a bad taste in our mouths.
Diaz-Cordova was deported from the U.S. several months ago after she had fled homicidal gangs in her homeland. Immigration officials did not believe her life was actually at risk. Lawyers for the convicted police officers say that they will appeal.
In Saudi Arabia, an undocumented migrant Yemeni blogger will serve 10 months in prison for a social media post supporting LGBTQ rights. Mohammed al-Bakari must also pay a fine equivalent to $2,700 and will be deported back to his homeland after he's released from prison. The 29-year-old has been living in Riyadh since fleeing Yemen in June 2019 after several death threats. Saudi Arabia has no specific laws against LGBTQ people. Bakari was charged with violating public order and morality because of what authorities called sexual references in his posting. That's common practice in cases involving sexual orientation or gender identity. Other charges included promoting homosexuality online and imitating women. Human Rights Watch says Bakari was forced to endure the infamous anal exam that's falsely claimed to prove whether someone is gay. He was also repeatedly beaten in custody to coerce a confession of his sexuality. He was held in solitary confinement for weeks and denied medical attention for his heart condition. A statement by Human Rights Watch's LGBT plus rights researcher, Rasha Yunez, pointed out that Saudi Arabia's public relations campaigns tout the kingdom's progress, but the court's jail sentence for peaceful speech and then deportation to Yemen, where the defendant's life is at risk, shows how hollow those claims are. Bakari has until August 20th to appeal.
Another Human Rights Watch alert involves two men in the North African nation of Tunisia. An appeals court on July 28th upheld their prison sentences for sodomy, but reduced the penalty from 2 years to 1 year of a possible 3-year maximum. One of the men unwittingly initiated the case by complaining to authorities that the other man had failed to repay a loan. A lawyer for the men said that when they were both brought into the police station, an officer said that one of them looked gay. The lawyer said both men were bullied into confessing that they are gay. They denied that in court. According to local activist groups, The men's refusal to undergo debunked gay-proving anal exams was judged by the court to be evidence against them. Tunisian President Kais Saied's support for the continued criminalization of private, consensual, adult, same-gender sex is on record. He has reportedly called LGBTQ people deviants. Human Rights Watch Rasha Yunus called any prison sentence in cases like this a grave injustice.
In a rare intervention by the UK in territorial affairs, the Cayman Islands' British de facto head of state is forcing the legal recognition of same-gender couples. The Overseas Territories Governor, Martin Roper, acted after local lawmakers failed to pass a domestic partnership bill. A Cayman's appeals court ordered the Legislative Assembly to enact a measure to provide lesbian and gay couples the legal status equivalent to marriage, while noting that it needed not be marriage itself. Roper said that the Cayman Islands must comply with the Constitution and the European Convention on Human Rights. He told local media that, "It was clear to me that the domestic partnership bill would satisfy the legal requirement and at the same time maintain the current definition of marriage." However, Roper acknowledged a challenge to the appeals court ruling that demands full marriage equality at the UK Privy Council in London. "It's the final arbiter in legal issues involving British overseas territories. The case is likely to be heard in December along with another marriage equality case from the British Overseas Territory of Bermuda." Roper said that after consultation with the UK Foreign Office, the domestic partnership bill would be published on August 10th for a period of public consultation and would probably take effect in September.
The Tribal Council of the Belcourt, North Dakota Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians has voted to change husband and wife in its marriage statutes to spouse. Unmarried tribal members will now also be able to adopt, according to local TV station KFYR. The August 6th, 6-2 decision came on the heels of a pro-marriage equality march in Belcourt. As sovereign nations within the borders of the U.S., Native American tribes were generally not affected by the U.S. Supreme Court marriage equality ruling in June 2015. Some of the tribes follow the marriage laws of the state they're in, so that ruling did automatically cover them. For the rest, it's up to each tribal governing authority to change any heterosexual-only marriage laws. Veteran gay journalist Rex Walkner tracks marriage equality around the world. He notes that of the 574 Native American tribes, at least 29 have taken specific action to open marriage to same-gender couples.
Finally,
people tell me that I just daydream and waste my time. Oh, but there's really nothing that's gonna change my mind, 'cause I'm doing just fine.
One of Sweden's top pop music stars came out this week, and Darin Zenyar is doing just fine. Known professionally by just his first name, Darin rose to fame on Swedish Idol in 2004. He's had 7 number one albums in Sweden since then. Darin was born in Sweden to Kurdish parents. His announcement was a breath of fresh air in Kurdistan's burgeoning LGBTQ community, where his bravery was universally praised. The now 33-year-old heartthrob came out to his 110,000 followers in an Instagram post on August 3rd to coincide with Stockholm's annual Pride celebration. He said, "Everyone in the world should be able to be proud and accepted for who they are. I know how difficult it can be. Took me a while, but I am proud to be gay. Happy Pride!"
That's News Wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 8th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is recorded remotely during the COVID-19 emergency, but is still being written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
newsgroup transcripts,
and CDs and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
5 years ago, around 30% of the people were in favor of equal rights for the LGBTI community. At this moment, 5 years later, it's already 50%. So that's also what we see in the voting results. People are really split in between being pro-European, being pro-LGBTI, and being ultra-conservative and anti-LGBTI.
A European activist visits the queer space between Poland and a hard place. But first, it's always the right time to honor the caregivers in times like COVID, in times like AIDS, and in times like the U.S. Civil War.
A tribute to the caregivers, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In Washington, D.C., surrounding the DuPont Circle Metro Station's Q Street entrance, is an inscription, a tribute to the volunteers and caregivers who gave tirelessly to people living with HIV and AIDS. It reads, "Thus in silence, in dreams, projections, returning, resuming, I thread my way through the hospitals. The hurt and wounded I pacify with soothing hand. I sit by the restless all the dark night. Some are so young, some suffer so much. I recall the experience, sweet and sad." The inscription was dedicated on July 14, 2007. The words were lifted from Walt Whitman's poem, The Dresser, written in 1865. It tells of his experiences as a volunteer during the Civil War, tending swarms of sick and dying boys. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Alan Brown, in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Joy Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
This is Leigh Delaria.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
Could it be Poland's Stonewall? Police reacted violently to thousands of protesters in the streets of Warsaw, Krakow, Lublin, and other cities around the country. Many were injured and dozens have been arrested. The massive spontaneous demonstrations followed the preventive detention of trans activist Małgorzata Sidowitz, who is known as Margo. Margo is part of the group Stop BS. They had recently been hanging rainbow flags and putting face masks on public monuments, including a statue of Jesus. ILGA Europe, Human Rights Watch, and other international organizations are calling on institutions like the European Union, the Council of Europe, and the United Nations to intervene. Remy Bonney is adding his voice to that call. He's a political scientist and LGBTQI activist from Belgium, specializing in queer movements in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. Bonney warned in a written statement that if Europe does not intervene in Poland right now, the EU is going into the same direction as what happened to LGBTI people during World War II. He's calling on European Council President Charles Michel to convene an extraordinary session of the Council. Just before the crisis erupted, Bonnie spoke with This Way Out's Sydney correspondent William Broom about the situation in Poland in the wake of President Andrzej Duda's homophobic and successful re-election campaign.
Rimi Bonnie, thanks so much for joining us here on This Way Out.
Good morning from Warsaw, actually.
It's great to have you on the program. As you just said, you are in Warsaw, Poland. Could you tell us how the recent re-election of the president will affect Poland's LGBTIQ plus community?
Yeah, so what we've seen during the election campaign is that the current president and the re-elected president, Andrzej Duda, was actually using a lot of aggressive bigotry towards the LGBTI community. He was building up his campaign, his election campaign, based upon bigotry, and was scapegoating the LGBTI community all the time. And now I'm here in Poland to talk with civil society and what they want to do to counteract what's the president started here. And I hear a lot of pessimistic voices at the moment, and a lot of Polish activists fear that Poland is going into the same direction as Russia has been going over the last decade, so that the LGBTI community gets scapegoated for basically everything, that the LGBTI community gets portrayed as a Western ideology, and so on. So the LGBTI community in Poland at the moment is very, very pessimistic about their future.
You've said previously that the Polish election resembles the current European fight between liberalism and illiberalism. Can you expand on that?
Poland is a very, very polarized country. It's literally split in between 50% who vote for the conservative, the ultra-conservative current president, and another 50% who vote for the liberal president. The difference between and the result of the voting was very, very small between the two of them. And the liberal president is very pro-LGBTI rights, is very pro-European, and as a liberal president in the best sense of the word. And on the other hand, you have the very conservative candidate, who is against everything that you can imagine that is about human rights, and about liberalism, about democracy, and so on. Literally both opposites of each other. And you see that Poland is split not just between these two candidates, but it's split between people who live in the bigger cities and people who live in villages. And the current president, the conservative president, has been elected, re-elected actually, based upon votes coming from villages with the amount of citizens smaller than 5,000. So that also means that Poland has a very, very big countryside still, and that the divide between the countryside and the bigger cities is huge.
I understand that during the 2014 presidential election, there was very much a focus on Muslim migrants. Why do you think there has been a shift to LGBTIQ people?
Yeah, it's basically all about election strategy. What we see is that every time the PIS government, so the Law and Justice government, the Law and Justice Party, makes their election campaign, they try to scapegoat a certain minority in the country. At the 2014 election campaign, they have chosen for the danger of an influx of Muslim migrants, in their opinion. And and that was like, of course, we had the big refugee crisis in 2014, but people coming from Syria and Afghanistan. What the Poles have seen, of course, is that no Muslim migrants came to Poland. All of them went to Western Europe. So the election campaign didn't work anymore. And in 2016, 17, you saw that there was a certain shift towards a new minority. And the new minority was easily the LGBTI community. And that's because the LGBTI community was the most visible civil rights minority at that moment, and still is, in Poland. We saw in the bigger cities in Poland huge LGBTI prides happening. The one in Warsaw, for instance, the capital city, attracts every year 50,000 people. It gets a lot of media attention. One of the opposition leaders is an openly gay man. So the LGBTI minority in Poland was very, very visible. So it was an easy target for the PIS government to materialize a new scapegoat.
Now, the presidential result was pretty close this time around. Does that suggest a shift in attitudes regarding LGBTIQ people?
Yes, that's also what we not just see in the voting results. We also see it in opinion polls. While 5 years ago, around 30% of the people were in favor of equal rights for the LGBTI community, at this moment, 5 years later, it's already 50%. So that's also what we see in the voting results. People are really split in between being pro-European, being pro-LGBTI, and being ultra-conservative and anti-LGBTI. That's what people are very, very split about in Poland. And it's a really a 50-50 divide in Poland at the moment, yes.
Now, why do you believe that for the past 5 years, regional conservative leaders have spread bigotry concerning the rights and equal treatment of sexual and gender minorities? What do you think are the main reasons behind that?
It's a combination of several things. Poland is, of course, after Romania, and is the most religious country in Europe. People are, in general, still very, very conservative in the country. What we've seen, of course, is that the LGBTI community becomes a very visible human rights movement in Poland, as everywhere in the world. And having this conservativeness, especially on the countryside in Poland, combined with the visibility of the LGBTI community, that's one of the main reasons, of course, why the PIS government has chosen to scapegoat and to attack the LGBTI community over the last years. But also there are other factors playing, of course. Poland is not an isolated case. We see that the same things are happening in Hungary. We see the same things happening in Romania, sometimes in the Baltic states as well. There is a certain international cooperation also behind that. And that's also why I make my point. The fight against the LGBTI community resembles the fight between liberalism and between illiberalism movements here in Central and Eastern Europe. Within the geopolitical debate between Europe and Russia, the LGBTI community is very much in the front line at the moment.
The World Congress of Families. Can you tell us a bit about that and also Poland's involvement?
Yes, so the World Congress of Families is basically a huge American-based umbrella organizations for ultra-conservative, anti-LGBTI, anti-woman organizations all across the world. They have their annual conference. Last year it was in Verona in Italy, where they meet together with people from the NGO world, but also with state leaders. The Russians are very much involved in there, and not just Russian NGOs or Russian state leaders, but also Russian intelligence officers, because the Russians, of course, use these kind of conferences also to make connections with conservative, like-minded politicians and policymakers. But the Poles also have been very involved in there. In Poland, we have this very, very conservative organization called Ordo Iuris. It's an organization who pleads against abortion, who recently started a campaign to establish LGBT-free zones in Poland. And this organization is one of the main leaders of the World Congress of Families, also one of the main funders. They have been organizing conferences here in Warsaw for the World Congress of Families before. Also, the Iuris is involved within this conference, and at the same time, they are in the advisory boards of many, many ministries here in Warsaw. The World Congress of Families is a very, very influential organization here in Poland.
I understand that during the campaign, the president described LGBTI ideology as more harmful than communism. And he also announced he wants to constitutionally anchor that children cannot be adopted by same-sex couples. How big an issue are subjects and topics like same-sex adoption in Poland?
Yeah, well, that's basically the question all activists say. Same-sex adoption was not up to debate at this moment. I mean, the first things that they want to establish are basic human rights. It's an anti-discrimination legislation. It's not even same-sex marriage, but civil unions for same-sex couples. So why he started talking about adoption by same-sex couples, nobody knows, actually. Yeah, it's again purely an election strategy to portray the LGBTI community as a very, very pro-European, very, very Western ideology. This adoption link worries me a lot, because you see that not directly the president, but organizations behind the president, so often far-right organizations, often say that same-sex adoption as the same as pedophilia. So reiterating the demand of the LGBTI community for same-sex adoption and not allowing them, he somehow also gives strength to this very, very far-right neo-Nazi segments of the Polish society who literally link adoption by same-sex couples to pedophilia. And that's a very worrying thing. And also, indeed, the comment that he made that the LGBTI ideology, which is already in itself a very, very despicable term, because that literally dehumanized the whole LGBTI community, in my opinion. They say that the LGBTI people, their sexual orientation or their gender identity is not real, but it's just a stupid ideology, which is coming from the West. And then even saying in a country like Poland, who suffered so much from communism, that this ideology is even more harmful than the communism. And combined with it, that he did it before, the day before he made a big visit to Auschwitz-Birkenau, one of the biggest concentration camp, the symbolism of this far-right bigotry was just over the top at some points. I was speaking with a journalist a few days ago here in Poland from a liberal newspaper who has been working on LGBTI issues for many, many years now. And he was telling me, Remy, 10 years ago, I had to travel for my newspaper to Uganda to report on the death penalty being implemented for the LGBTI community. And now I'm here back in my own country, and I'm hearing the same kind of rhetoric all the time. Because also in countries like Uganda, the politicians at that point were saying that the LGBTI movement is not a movement, it's an ideology coming from the West, and these kind of things. So all of these people are very, very frightened about the future.
Belgian political scientist and LGBTQI activist Remy Bonny updates our William Broom on resistance to anti-queer oppression in Europe beyond the crisis in Poland.
People fleeing from Chechnya from persecution because of their sexual orientation are being targeted by Russian and Chechen far-right groups.
That's next time on This Way Out. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Tanya Kane Perry and Michael LeBeau, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Alan Brown, produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns, and from William Broom. Brad Paisley and Mason Williams performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KUR, Kurtztown, Pennsylvania, 5GTR, Mount Gambier, South Australia, WOZO, Knoxville, Tennessee, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.